Ezra Gandalf here. Thanks for joining us for a podcast today. I love doing these, and I always am very selective about the guests that I bring to my podcast. And I'm typically looking for thought leaders and people that I respect. Sometimes they're healthcare experts, as you know, who've been listening to us. Sometimes they're marketing experts within the industry, and sometimes they're just really, really expert at what they do, a very specific niche. So in this case, today, I'm going to introduce to you Brian Massey, who is our conversion scientist, and he's going to be talking about optimization of websites, optimization of landing pages, specifically in terms of getting response from the campaign, largely page search driven. Fun fact, Brian was in one of his newsletters that I follow, had mentioned, hey, email me, he wrote a specifically a terrific article, and he said in the bottom, it said, P.S., if you respond to me, I'll reply back. And I said, okay. So that's how we got here today. So Brian, welcome. Can you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself?
And yeah.
So know you already, like I do?
I am. Well, we go back as far as you do. So we started, I started Conversion Sciences at the end of 2006. So we've been doing this for a while. I was a computer programmer by training in computer science in college. I went into sales out of college, rose to my highest level of incompetence at that. Ran a business in the 90s that didn't survive the dot-com bust, and then spent the first part of this century building out the marketing platforms and lead generation platforms for a number of technology companies. So there really was no other direction for me to go with this kind of computer science, marketing, sales, entrepreneur than to be a conversion scientist. So put on a lab coat, which is my trademark, and began doing that. And, you know, the tools have just progressed so amazingly over the last 14, 15 years that the ready availability of data to really understand how visitors are interacting with your campaigns and the pages that you're putting in front of them has just made it so interesting and so reliable in terms of improving your pages for your particular visitors. The newsletter that I sent was in frustration that big companies and, you know, small companies, medium sized, but big companies that should have the budgets and know better just are doing such a terrible job. And in this case, it was a healthcare company. So
let's talk about that a little. So one of the things that our readers and podcast listeners will recognize is that we talk a lot about and write a lot about healthcare consumerism and the patient experience. And I literally just got back off a plane on Monday speaking in Fort Lauderdale again about that topic about consumerism and looking at things from the patient's point of view. And so, you know, I thought your experience really resonated with me. It's just so common and something that seems, might seem to, you know, an organization, no big deal, a redirect is a big deal to the patient and the patient's point of view. So I'd love to hear, you know, that story and just bring that to life, perhaps, because, you know, our audience, Brian, includes. We certainly have some CEOs, we have some clinicians, we have marketers, you know, very, very senior marketers, we have the more junior marketers, we have a pretty broad audience. But I think it's always important to bring them back to that patient experience, which is at the end of the day in healthcare is what this is all about, or certainly a large part of what this is all about.
Yeah. So there is what an organization believes, and then there is what trickles down into the technology implementation side of things. And, you know, I think in the case of the specific example that I use, where I was going and looking for a particular test that I needed done, a heart scan, you know, just to make sure that my arteries weren't being clogged with calcium. It was an acquisition that was made. A large hotel conglomerate bought the, I'm sorry, not hotel, the hospital conglomerate bought the hospital that normal, you know, offers this. They still offer it, but someone in the IT web department said, we'll just redirect all of those links. First of all, we're going to get rid of all their stuff and they're going to come to our branded stuff because brand is most important. And we're just going to redirect all these things to our homepage. And number one, there was nothing on the homepage that would allow me to sign up for this particular thing. And number two, the homepage and the primary call to action, which is find a doctor, was just horrible. It was difficult and required you to know all of the medical terms. There was a dropdown that had 240 options on it. And so I go through these things and I'm thinking, number one, how can a business like this, and you know, healthcare is a business, especially in the US, how can a business do this, be so incompetent, number one, number two, do it to what I consider a vulnerable audience? So there's a model that Brian and Jeffrey Eisenberg set up that we continue to use today, because it's a really easy way for you to stop and put yourself into the shoes of different kinds of visitors to your site. And they look at, based on some Myers-Briggs studies, actually, they look at what mode you're coming when you're researching. So if you're interested in something and doing research at the beginning of something, you're going to be very methodical. You just want to know how it works and the details. And the last thing you're going to want to do is call or talk to someone. One of those types, though, is people who are coming in a humanist mode. And these are people that are interested in how they're going to feel if they take advantage of whatever you're offering on your website. When we have a health scare, when we lose a job, when we're having financial difficulties, maybe we have too much debt and we're not able to pay our student loans, we tend to shift to this humanist mode, this vulnerable mode. And the websites tend to be designed by IT people and web developers who are very methodical in their approach. They do things very logically. We have all of these options. Let's put them all in a dropdown and not define what those things are. So I was, this happens often because I look at all websites with a pretty critical eye, but to kind of feel that moment of not only am I in a vulnerable state, but there's no one here that is interested in how I feel was particularly really landed with me. So I immediately felt like I had to write about it.
So that's really important, Brian. And I love that. Thank you for sharing such a personal intimate story, because I feel like it's exactly that. I don't think anybody intentionally, I can almost assuredly say that nobody intentionally was trying to A, make your life more difficult. B, I don't, so they certainly weren't trying to be callous to the user's viewpoint. The sad thing is it just never occurred to them at all, which is really sad, right? It's not very mindful. And from a business standpoint, almost all of our clients have paid search as a, and also organic as SEO as a huge part of what they do, right? So we think about this a lot. And if you're spending, and not in this case, it was coming off of a brochure, but still it's like, we think about these redirects very, very carefully. Coincidentally, minutes before I jumped on this call, we're talking about one of our clients with multiple clinics who's doing a lot more clinics. And we're talking about a new agreement, and they have a website that doesn't exactly fit where they're going. And so there's whole redirects and how we're going to do that. And those are big decisions. You know, are we going to keep that same domain from an SEO standpoint? Are we going to do redirects? How are we going to do those redirects? And so from a business standpoint, it's awful, right? So you and I know this in our sleep, right? When you do, if you're going to change a page, you need to make sure it's going to a target page, that it doesn't confuse Google, that it works for paid search, it works for your users. So from a business standpoint, just an economic standpoint, it's a disaster to make that change that they made at that particular hospital. But the point I'm making is, forget the money. From a reputation and from just doing a good thing, it's like nobody occurred to them that this would be that big of a change. And I just think that human side of this is really, really intriguing. So,
an exclamation point that wasn't in my article, but I saw my doctor soon after that, told him the story. And, he said, yeah, the hospitals aren't as interested in preventive care as they are in servicing people who have problems. So his implication was, oh, they don't care about me until I actually have a heart attack, because then I generate a lot of revenue. And so these inadvertent things where you're maintaining your brand color and you make sure that the page is using the logos right and the right font and the right words, is actually hurting the overall brand perception. And the last thing healthcare needs right now is more of that.
Right. And, you know, the I don't have the numbers at my fingertips here, but the most, it's always been like, you know, healthcare providers were like sort of at the top of the trust pyramid, and I don't know, marketers are kind of at the bottom or people, I'm teasing, but, you know, it's like, or used car salesman or whatever. And hospitals were below that, but still, you know, high. That's coming down, right? There's a lot of, you know, a lot more critical thinking, critical, not in terms of thinking through, but critical in terms of negative thinking about healthcare post pandemic and, you know, all the different stuff we've all been through. So you're right. And I think it's just really good because, you know, I'm working with healthcare every day. And even for me to get a reminder of, you know, like we're all patients too, all of us, even doctors, they're all patients, right? And I think it's important to try to always keep that. And that's why the whole patient experience in healthcare consumerism is such a big part of what we do. We're not, people don't hire us very often for patient experience training, but it's vital to be, to really being the expert marketers we are, because we're always thinking about it. That's why I speak at patient experience conferences, right? To understand that. So anyway, you're thank you for that share. Your blog post resonated with me, which is exactly why I reached out to you. So sure. I appreciate that. So let's talk about, you know, like one of the things that you and I talked about offline is, and I'll include this in the link, because, you know, we talk about a lot to our clients about there's sort of four things that are gonna matter with digital marketing. There's the demand, there's the machine optimization, there's the stuff that you do every day, the landing page optimization, and then the response on the back end. And the point that we make in our blog is there's a multiplicative effect. In other words, if you can somehow double the effectiveness of your team answering the inquiries, you've just doubled your results without spending a dime anywhere else. And the one thing I think that has the most opportunity and the highest ROI potential in many cases is the stuff that you do. So I would love, you know, like this is stuff that I just love. And, but, you know, I have to think I'm pretty good at this, but you're the expert, right? So I'd love you to share for our audience who may not be as close to landing page optimization, share with us, what does that really mean? And what are the, like the top factors that really matter from a response point of view?
Yeah. Well, so to your point, excuse me, I've got a product or a service that's a fit. I have a unique and powerful value proposition in the marketplace. If I'm successful, I've got generally a good product or service. I'm bringing the right traffic to these pages and, you know, paying dearly for it through Google. But I mean, intent-driven ads are like, they're the best to convert. So much easier than, you know, like Facebook ads or display ads, which from a direct standpoint, rarely are a good way to go. Display ads are good for other things. So we have this great source of traffic. And then we, you know, generally the teams and the agencies that are generating that are kept separate or keep themselves separate, I think, depending. I'm always surprised at how many paid search organizations don't have an optimization service or ability in their practice. But leaving that to the customer who is not good at getting data, because PPC is a data-driven endeavor. You've got to know how to evaluate people's clicks and reactions. They don't have that. They're putting up web pages that seem to logically make sense. You know, as I said about IT and web developers, they've got a job to do, and it's usually not in line with the company's values, unfortunately. So yes, when we get a call, it's generally because the paid search traffic has gotten expensive. The acquisition cost has gone down because there's more competition, or they have made some sort of a change to the site to make it prettier or more on brand or to refresh it, and suddenly conversion rates have dropped. So they're upside down. They have to either up their bids or they have to cut back on the keywords, the non-producing keywords. Optimizing your landing experience decreases your acquisition cost, which means you can spend more, which means you can expand your keywords, which means you expand your traffic, which means sales and revenue go up. So that's the multiplicative effect. Not only will you have a higher conversion rate from the traffic you're already getting, but it's a lever now that allows you to invest more in more traffic to expand not just the top of the line, but the bottom of the line.
Yeah, it's really funny. One of the things that even with some sophisticated clients, just to keep bringing people back to the whole our idea of ROI. And, you know, one of the jokes I make sometimes is, oh, is $1 million marketing budget a lot? It's like, well, they're like, well, not really if you're bringing in 10 million, right? It's an ROI faction. And so one of the things Brian and I were talking about offline, and I think this is worth fun and worth just describing to help people understand the world that, you know, Brian and I are living in pretty much every day. You know, back in the day, and both Brian and I have been around for a while, you know, when we had to do traditional media, to do a new commercial on TV is like a half, 3 months in development max. And then to run it is another 3 months in a max minimum, another 3 months to run it. And then the tracking wasn't very good. And so after months and months and months and tens of, or hundreds of thousands of dollars of spend, we're trying to determine even then, did it work? Whereas with paid search, we can get results, you know, theoretically in a day. I usually trust them a lot more after a week or two, but it's really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you hit a winner, it shows up like immediately. You can tell like, holy cow, this is going to be fun. And so that's what's exciting about the paid search world, is because you have so much control over every variable that matters, the time of day, the whether you're using extensions or not, the keywords you're going after, the ad copy, how you're using all the various tools we have to make that good. And don't forget the landing page. You have so much control. And if you can create a testing environment where you're truly optimizing, and there's budget to do that, because you have to have budget to do that. Optimizing doesn't happen without budget. Then the results can be spectacular. And then all of a sudden, something that was working reasonably well suddenly starts working very well. And it's like, well, wait, what if we spend a lot more? We'll make a lot more. And that's when it really gets fun. And that's, and the speed of that and that leverage is what I really fell in love with digital marketing for. Because, you know, again, I was a direct response marketer. I used to do a lot of sort of, you know, infomercial or 30-second direct response ads. And that's a lot to make the results happen there. But now it's like, it's almost instantaneous. So Brian, like when you're looking at, you mentioned earlier, you're critical of websites. I would like to hear, why don't we start off with best practices? And then, you know, like headlines or CTAs or whatever. And then maybe I can, to stretch that a little bit, you can do this any way you want to, talking about healthcare, where you see that doesn't follow those best practices. So let's start with some of the best practices. And I know you know this in your sleep, but our audience may not know this as closely. So if you can kind of go through some of the really critical factors that you're evaluating a landing page with, like what are the things you're looking for?
Yeah, yeah. And there really are no best practices. Every audience is different. I think what I'm going to talk about is a little bit more about where you should be focusing, kind of the order in which you should be focusing on your page. So especially for a landing page has only two jobs. Number one, keep the promise that was made in the ad, in the email, in the social media post, wherever that traffic is coming from, keep the promise. Usually this is as simple as using the words in your headline or subhead that match the words that were used in the ad. And then the second job is to make it very clear that you're asking someone to do something. So you want to bring them to choice, which if you think about it is a gift. And if they're not ready and they're not ready to buy, no is a perfectly fine choice. Thank you very much and be on your way. To that end, number one, we have to let them know they're in the right place. So again, matching the ad in terms of keeping the promise, they'll instantly see, oh, okay, I'm in the right place. This has the 50% discount, or this has the sign up for the procedure I'm looking for, et cetera. And then you need to give them a reason to keep looking. So that generally involves being very clear about what your value proposition is. In the e-commerce world, do you have the biggest selection? Do you have the lowest price? Do you have the highest quality? Making sure that whatever your value proposition is very close. Interestingly enough, the navigation bar, so the top navigation on desktops is the best place to state that they're in the right place, what sorts of things you offer, and what your value proposition is. So play with those words. If you've got a navigation bar that says services, solutions, those sorts of very conceptual things where they have to dive in and it doesn't answer the question of what do you do? So bring some of your specific offerings or product categories to that, to do that. Headline, very important, great place to keep the promise. and the headline subheadline work together to give them a reason to scroll. So you make a claim that that makes them ask, really, how are you going to do that? Or is that true? So that I want to scroll and see what's more. Images are very important for a lot of sites that I see. There, you can tell that they've created a page layout and they have a block for copy and a block for image. And then someone goes in and fills in, uses that space to fill in the value proposition, the headline. And then they go out and find some stock photography of happy, smiling people, preferably a group of very diverse people, basically pandering to the audience. And you know what gets read as often as headlines? Captions. So go look at your landing pages, look at the images, and write a caption for the image. And if you can't write something that doesn't sound ridiculous, like, we're all happy and smiling here in our diverse company, and we don't know why we really had to point that out, that's not a good caption. Change it out. Show your employees, show some of your customers, and then you can write a caption that says, our customers give us a 97% approval rating. Suddenly that becomes a very interesting headline and helps build your value proposition. For companies large and small, there is the consistency of the brand presentation. So consistency is very important for brand, and brand is, if you have a strong brand, it's a spectacular advantage, converting, selling, the whole nine yards. Sometimes though, that works against human nature. So what color should your call to action button be? This is the perennial first test that most people do, and you're not going to get very much from it. The answer, I can tell you, the color of the call to action, anything that you want to draw the eye to, calls to action are usually good. Remember, we need to let them know that we're bringing them to choice. The color of the call to action button or the form should be outside of the palette of the rest of the page. So you can already hear the brand people going like, wait a minute, we're gray and blue. There's no place for green, but on a page, that green will look like it's one of the most important things on the page because it's the top of the visual hierarchy and will get noticed, and the visitor will know they're being asked to do something. And this is the gift of your landing page. So that's an easy one. You don't even have to test that. But beyond that, the thing that's going to move the needle most is your ability to, number one, build out your value proposition and the whys, and then design a layout that gets the visitor's eyes to those things, anchored by images that have great captions, and you're off to a running start on your landing page.
That's outstanding. And you know, one thing that I think that when I was first learning about paid search so many years ago is the importance of paying off the promise, where, and it's so often like people fail at hello, right? So they're clicking for a specific headline on a specific thing, like, I don't know, colonoscopy, and then they go to the homepage. Like, wait, you've already confused them. You've already given them more work to do. Now they have, and it's just such an avoidable mistake.
And that's a good place to distinguish between the difference between a landing page and a homepage. So the job of the homepage is to get people off of the homepage and on to the right thread within the site. So this is for general traffic that you don't know anything about what's bringing them. On a landing page, you have this powerful capability. You know why they're there. You know what they clicked on and what the words were. So you know what they're looking for. And so you can design landing pages specifically for what they're looking for.
Exactly. And the Brian, you know, there was a book at the beginning of the age, you probably remember this, called Don't Make Me Think. It's
Krug.
But it's still a great concept, right? Don't make me think. It's like, if you have to make me think, I'm not going to, and I'm going to bounce. And every action that you're asking a consumer to take, and it's funny, we with our own company, we have a webinar coming up, and I had to go back to my team. It's like, nope, you're asking to go to this page and then to click to go to the form. That's an extra action. You're going to lose probably a third right there, no matter what. Anytime you ask them to, it's basically, you're going to have this huge downdraft of people. So it's really important to take them. And sometimes technologically, for whatever reason, there's, in this case, it was because the webinar sign up was on Zoom and integrating with our database, whatever. But it's still like, we want to continuously optimize and think about how do we take friction out of that process. And I love the way you establish that, though. Keep the promise, because it's bigger than just sending them to the right page, right? It's does this headline in this ad pay off with that landing page? And then when you start thinking about complicated campaigns with thousands of keywords and different ads, and then making that landing page match in most cases, and then what's the right trade-off there? Let me ask now, with dynamic search ads with Google, where the ad, you're throwing in different headlines and different body copy, and it's sort of mixing, matching, and optimizing from that standpoint. Is that causing challenges in your experience to on the conversion side? Because sometimes, like, the headline that ends up in the ad may not be exactly obvious. I know it's a little advanced. I'm just curious what you think about that.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit out of school, because we don't do any traffic generation. We really work with the teams that our clients are bringing. To the extent that you can pass keyword information through and somehow integrate that into a headline or subhead that keeps it sounding like English, that's a solution. But otherwise, if you can take those dynamic ads and instead of grouping them necessarily by keyword, but grouping them by the offer that you're making, then you can use dynamic headlines, within that group that are a consistent call to action and have a specific page for that group. And I think that's one of the things people resist, is that if you're going to do this, then you end up multiplying your landing pages. But if you start off optimizing one that has a high conversion rate, that's a good one to bet on for subsequent calls to action and offer sets.
Yeah, it's such an important concept. The idea that if you're going to make an offer in your ad, which, first of all, if you have a good offer, it'll make your pay-per-click ad look better. So that's the first step. And then it better be really clear that you just have some offer for a colonoscopy. Easy prep colonoscopy. And then it just goes to a basic page about colonoscopies. You've lost it. I'm interested in a better easy prep colonoscopy. Now you're telling me that, what's the easy part? I wanted that easy part, right? So those are the kinds of things that, if you're not really paying attention, are easy to miss. And then we have to think about in our case, our teams, our paid search guys and gals are religious about this. Like, if something's not working, they want to communicate that, but that's something that's really easy to miss. Like, that offer must be clear, not just on the same procedure or the same offer, like, it all has to make sense together.
Yeah.
Switching over to your, the color thing, that's such a classic story. We talked about that prior to getting on. What about, so the headline and the, I love the caption, that's super cool. Body copy versus, social proof versus other elements. Are there any things that just sort of stand out to you that, you want to think about it? And I'm just curious if you agree with me on this. I'm always telling our team, it's like that first above the fold, even though the fold is varies by device, it still matters. Like, if you can't win them there, you're not going to win them later down the page. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about, okay, we've got a strong headline that you alluded to, we've got the right caption, we have the offer up front. For those that want to scroll and want to know more, how do you build that story? What are some of the
keys? So let's kind of think about two broad groups of visitors for this space. Anybody who's highly motivated is going to get through whatever crap you put in front of them. So their doctor told
you. That's a great insight, for sure.
Yes.
This
blinds us. So the doctor told me to go to this specific site and sign up for the colonoscopy. And I'm going to spend every time. And you can see this in the session recordings when people are just all over the place and they're just trying to find that call to action. We call these spontaneous visitors. Again, going back to the Eisenberg brothers model, they're just looking for a way to take action. And so somebody may come to your website in a methodical mode, search other places, and then come back, say, all right, I'm choosing you. And they're in spontaneous mode. They need to just see that form at the top of the page that they can fill out or whatnot. Now there's a group of people, so colonoscopy. My doctor said I need a colonoscopy. I've just spent 30 to 45 minutes researching it, all the things that I need to know about it. And then I come to your page, cognitively drained, and you start putting these things in front of me. While I'm highly motivated, I just don't have the energy to get through. And these are the abandonments that you're losing. This is the group that we want to understand better and give them what they're looking for. The other mode to come in is a competitive mode where you've got to really spell out what's in it for them. Now the methodicals and humanists will scroll, so you can have all this information below. The competitive, they will not scroll unless they see what's in it for them. And again, giving them a reason to read on. And you've got to have those calls to action high on the page for the spontaneous types. I hope I didn't digress too much from your original.
No, that's good. That's really intriguing. It all matters. This is such a deep topic. We can't possibly cover it in a short podcast like this, and I'm going to ask you, Brian, so you can think about what you want to plug at the end of this, whether it's the newsletter or your upcoming talks or whatever, books, because there's a lot. This is a huge topic, everybody. But Brian, I guess I would say before we wrap up here, let's talk about where the common mistake. You've already talked about one mistake in healthcare, but like you've seen, I don't know, tens of thousands of sites, certainly thousands, right? This is all you do every day is look at the effectiveness of sites. So I'd love to hear what do you see in healthcare that tends to be particularly common and egregious, or maybe just in general, what are the egregious issues where it's kind of like, oh, this one's dead on arrival before I even start.
Yeah. So we have this website-wide idea of what I call pancake form. I actually sent the newsletter on this last month. And it's the stack of fields. So this is how I'm going to interact with all of my people. We spent a couple of years working with a company called One Natural Way. They sell breast pumps to expectant mothers new mothers. And their value proposition is give us your insurance information and we'll show you what discount you get. So you can get your breast pump and the equipment at a significantly discounted price because of your insurance. Well, the form that they had over a dozen fields. It asked hard questions like social security number, doctor's name, doctor's phone number. And so there was this real challenge, but their default was stack of fields, the pancake form. So we took that and we converted it to a quiz style form. And I bring this up because this is a hypothesis that is just working for us in all sorts of industries. But you start off by asking them questions about themselves. And at each step, you're asking questions where they feel like, okay, they're asking questions about me. And then towards the end is when you're starting to ask more of the questions about their contact information and things like that. Fantastic result from that. It was 7 or 8 steps, and we tested the order, we tested the number of steps, we tested the way we presented, because every step becomes an opportunity not just to ask for the information, but to explain why you need it, like social security number, explain why you need it and why you should trust me with your social security number, even though you maybe just found me from a Google search. Very powerful. And then there's a psychological effect going on, we think, that is the sunk cost fallacy. So after I've answered 2 or 3 questions, I'm going to go ahead and finish the work because I've already invested in it. But it's a very, I think, compassionate and helpful way of saying, I'm listening to you, and here's the information that I need for us to take the next step. And explaining why that information is necessary is it's as close to compassion through a website as I think you can get. The headline on the company website that I visited said, we listen and care about you. Those aren't the exact words, but and the whole design and the whole experience clearly indicated that they don't. So the words are going to get you there. So that's one that we're very excited about. And I would like, what it does is it requires you to see the sign-up process as a process, as an interaction, and changes your approach to like, well, we have a page, it has a form on it. I don't know why it's not working.
I love it. You know, it's funny. There's a sort of pack there. One is sort of the idea, exactly like you said. I've heard other people, this is not a new concept, but Robert Cialdini was credited with a lot of that too. It's like the idea of, you said, sunk cost, or like, you know, you ask for something little and they feel compelled to keep going, right? But I think the bigger thing was, is looking at that as a customer service interaction versus a form is brilliant. That's such a cool concept, because the the interactive form thing, I'm seeing that more and more and more, and we like that a lot, because it does, you know, it looks overwhelming if you put it all at once, and it's not intuitive. It's like, wait, I'm going to make them go through a bunch of steps where it's really easy for them to fill out. And that's the problem, is so often intuitive doesn't actually work. What you think, you know, what you think is going to work, and you just assume that and never test that, which is a big part of what Brian talks about. Well, then you're going to suboptimize your results from the beginning. But that's a fantastic story. Cause yeah, I mean, the moment you said you, Social Security, my cringe factor just skyrocketed. Like, wait, I don't even know you. Why don't I tell this to my uncle? I don't, why am I telling you my Social Security number? Why do you need that? And bounce. So yeah, I think that's really, really important. Okay. Well, I tell you what, this has been very enlightening. And I knew this is such a rich topic. And again, to our readers, this is just something I just love. I love the conversion side of it. It's part of the juice of this. We love having, you know, our paid search team and our SEO teams, you know, they get all excited when they're getting clicks and they're getting conversions. And then our team wants to deliver that right experience to the writing team. And how do we get the creative to match and the right tone to match? Because if you look at it from a messaging standpoint, we have to get the copy broadly still has to reflect the brand. It has to be emotional. It has to be compelling. It has to do all those things. You know, we have to recognize that, and oftentimes we're not doing a pure stand apart website. We have other audiences that could be on that page, like other doctors, donors. So we have to thread that needle. And then if it's on the website, not a page, not a standalone web page, but a website, we're thinking about SEO too. So there's a lot of, we have to thread that needle and be able to, you know, make it work across methodologies. And that's why a lot of times we, as if you listen to Brian, I'm sure he advocates using standalone web pages, so you have that flexibility. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. You can just focus on the offer in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, I would love to have you. So our readers that, you know, think as highly of you as I do, where should they go? What do you recommend, you know, they can get more Brian, basically?
Well, I mean, if they want to subscribe to my emails, I don't really call it a newsletter. I guess technically that's what it is, but it doesn't come out like every Thursday morning. It is really more, it comes out when I feel like I have something important, interesting to say. And so I'm personality wise into my default state, I'm kind of a humanist. So I am interested in content that informs, but also talks about feeling and builds community. So go to conversionsciences.com/newsletter. You can sign up and you'll get in your inbox as I create them.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brian. This has been great.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.